The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY10 at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY10 with no spaces. You'll save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's Pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY10 at checkout to save some scratch. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions. Welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this awesomely terrible podcast name. But the QA is the important part because we want to have a fun conversation, the question and answer, the back and forth. We've got an amazing live chat already jumping in, talking about stinky fruits. I'm way off my produce reviewing game. I had an idea for an April Fool's joke this year, but I don't know if I'm really going to have the bandwidth to pull off like a really, really good, you know, like my yams video might just need to stand as a is like the last produce review on my main channel. So, awesome possum. We got hype, good vibes. Let's go. So, DTNL, I need an only yams channel. I actually, you know what? That could be pretty profitable with all the mukbangs and stuff out there. We're just like, this is a good vegetable to add to your dietary requirements. No one would watch me talk about that. Let's not oversell the talent here. It's pretty great. Dave Burns, when do you legally change your name to Some Gadget Guy and you can say AKA Juan Carlos Bagnell? It's going to be a bit. I'm going to have to earn a lot more money on these channels before I feel like, you know, I'd probably go corp instead. You know, I'd probably change some of the tax shenanigans around. Simon says that no, average consumers don't like durians. I did not know what a durian was. You guys have been talking about it in the chat. The fiber is unrivaled. 10 out of 10 would recommend. So thank you everybody for tuning in to another rambling diatribe on tech. The reason why we like to hold our show on a Monday is get through all of the news of the last week. Last week we did a pajama podcast, so I was like overloaded on news topics and links. The news block for this week's show is a little heavier. I actually am a little light on the gadget block. So if there's stuff that we're getting into the second half and you want to chat about, like I've been spending some time with the Redmi's, some Pocos, I might have a phone giveaway to plug at the end of this episode. I don't know that I can go the full 2 hours because the winds have been crazy here in Southern California. And as you might be able to hear, My voice is a little strained already, so I'm going to try and keep the patter to a dull roar as opposed to my normal gesticulating and crazy over the top YouTube thumbnail face shenanigans. We're going to try and keep this one a little chill. It's some gadget guy Monday morning, but it's some gadget guy's after dark voice. I don't know. We'll see how this goes. I might need to bail. So, instead of going through even more of this intro rambling, let's knock out some housekeeping because I put out a lot of stuff over the last week, including a video that published before the podcast went live. It's so funny how these things kind of roll in waves where, like, I got a bunch of gear in and I had a couple embargoes that were holding up some of the videos, and then everything just sort of published all in one week, which the YouTube algorithm loves it when we do that. Dave Burns is saying 10 minutes. Simon says Sipno says 14. Oh, I'm going to try and move quick, but we all know that I often fail at that. And not even 5 minutes in, and we've already digressed. Yeah, you guys got me. You started talking about produce, and I'm gonna have to like do a whole episode on why I love asparagus. All right, let's knock out housekeeping. All of the links for the housekeeping and all of the news stories that we're gonna be talking about gonna be on this week's show notes, somegadgetguy.com, including some information on the potential giveaway, which I'll talk about at the end of this show. So let's click over to screen share here real quick. This morning, A number one, the Joby Wavo Air wireless microphones, a really fun little competitor in the prosumer audio space. This is a two transmitter, one receiver wireless mic combo kit, and Joby sent them over for me to test drive, and they were really fun. So got a whole video out on that this morning. Then last week I covered the Innosyn 27-inch UHD art monitor. I was really impressed with this. I'm not into display tech enough to consider myself, an informed expert. I don't have fancy color calibration gear, but in this price range, like this is going toe to toe against like Dells and LGs in a similar price back bracket for an IPS monitor. So I was really impressed by it. It's a bright, vivid, crisp, colorful display. And switching between the different modes, I could totally see where a true artist, a true photography professional could probably get even more use out of a nice display like this. Oh, and Russ, Joby, yeah. Joby is the manufacturer of the GorillaPod. I've got a bunch of GorillaPods lying around. They just kicked off a whole series of new microphones. So totally worth checking out. Some really fun gear. And their wireless kit was pretty good. I liked how simple it was to set up. All right. I finally got my Poco F3 video out. I had to title it in the most obnoxious, clickbaity way possible, but Poco F3 in 2022, is it still worth it? Is it still worth it to use an amazingly powerful phone from 2021 in the year 2022? Who could even know? It's crazy. It's an old phone. But, there are newer phones out. But could you still use it? Shocked face thumbnail? No, it's a great phone. I had a lot to say about using the Poco F3. And especially in the whole idea of, no one phone is a perfect fit for everybody. That's kind of the gig. I think Poco's doing really well there. Now, on to my two most controversial videos of last week. The first one, I dumped Spotify, why I chose Qobuz. Obviously, Spotify's been in the news a lot. I'm not even going to bother talking about Spotify this week because I think it's a raging dumpster fire. And my experiences in doing this video showed how the Spotify Joe Rogan bots are out in force. This video, more than any other I've put out, maybe over the last year, at least since the video I put out about tech and politics for the Biden administration, this one has warranted the most number of ban hammers. So, like, if I just see generic comments posted from YouTube accounts, like, "I support free speech," then I kick them off. You obviously didn't watch the video because I'm talking about audio quality. And it doesn't matter why someone might want to leave Spotify. There are good alternatives to Spotify, both for audio quality and for treating artists and publishers better. So Qobuz pays out way better than Spotify. Qobuz pays out better than Apple Music. So if you care about that, those kinds of things, where your money goes, there are good reasons to switch. So this was super controversial. It is funny that in light of Spotify pulling episodes of the Joe Rogan podcast, a lot of that fervor has died down. Apparently, the free speech isn't as important to fight for when Spotify starts removing Joe Rogan's speech. But I digress. And the last one, Galaxy Z Fold 3 in 2022, happily sending it back. And TK Bay is in the chat right now. Everyone say sabajo to TK. I'm sure he's going to be so happy to get his Fold back. I'm going to be so happy to get my Duo back. This is an incredible place that we're in the folding smartphone tablet territory. Again, we're talking about super niche, super expensive folding tablets that turn into awkward phones. Nothing about this is average consumer. Nothing about this is mainstream. And at $2,000, if I've got a minor criticism of how this thing is operating, I feel that's an even more magnified criticism because it's $2,000 to use this thing. So obviously the Samsung Knights were very displeased with my take on this, even though I had almost exclusively nice things to say about it. Again, the main difference between me and, say, TechAlter, because TechAlter has almost the same criticisms of the Z Fold 3 that I have, but he's still showing it off in his videos, so he kept it. I would not keep it because this is not how I would want to use a folding tablet. So obviously, I'm the worstest of haters, and TechAlter had the exact same criticism. But, you know, he makes some good points. He makes some real good points. You know, those are good points that he makes. So I really, you know, haven't been impressed with the quality of conversation on Samsung products from Samsung Knights. That's the gig. Oh, I should probably kick out a screen share because now I am done with housekeeping. I did not look at the time, but I feel like I did that in under 10 minutes. So the thing is, I don't want people to feel bad about using the Fold. If they like using the Fold, I want them to keep liking using the Fold. But overlooking some of those issues that I've had with the Fold doesn't make the Fold better. And it's the same thing. Why I've been so snarkily critical of moving from the Duo 1 to the Duo 2. I feel we made the Duo 2 a better phone at the expense of making it a better Surface. And from using the Duo 1 right opposite the Fold 3, I prefer the Duo 1 form factor. You know, it's that kind of like nuance and critical thinking where I start the video on the Fold 3 saying, I am a human with opinions, and I immediately get Samsung Knights going, I disagree. You know, you disagree that I had an opinion, or you disagree that I really felt this way, or you disagree that I'm not going to keep the Fold 3. I have to keep the Fold 3 because you disagreed. That's the caliber. So there are all the comments that are up right now are comments that I feel are a bit more valid. You know, people who actually owned it or debating me on specific points, like, well, if you like this, then how come we don't do that? That's totally fine. But if it's just this, like, nuh-uh, because someone else said the Duo was trash, you're gone. I'm not even bothering. There was someone who was like literally arguing with everyone that had nice things to say about the Duo. No, that's not what we're going to do. We're not going to play that game. You know, making fun of me, disagreeing with me, like, that's fine. That's the whole reason why I operate a YouTube channel. But like purposely going out to antagonize other people who agreed with my assessment in a comment section, that's, I feel pretty fair to the fact that these are public beta devices. No, we're not going to play that game. Dustin Dory, it's not that bad. It's pretty bad, but it's not that bad. He writes, it's like the crowd that shouts, if you stop testing, the numbers will go down. It's Again, it's no self-awareness. I feel like that's the big problem. The people that leave comments like that have purposely sought out a collection of tech channels that have always told them that they've made the right choices in buying products, and any kind of pushback or criticism is met with outright hostility because they've built their personality around owning a certain label. It doesn't matter that I got to the end of my Fold 3 video going, you know, this is a brilliant piece of engineering. It just makes a really disgusting noise when you open the plastic and you can hear like a lip smacking sound. This is a marvel of engineering. It deserves to be like on a little museum Lazy Susan under glass and really fancy lighting. It's gorgeous. This is not what I want to carry. And if I had my pick, I would have the Duo 2 performance and improvements, but in the Duo 1 form factor, just for being so much more radically thin. Like, this to me is more like using a tablet. You can watch the video. I'm repeating the video now. See, Russ, and this is what we have to overcome. I truly believe in the mission of creating alternative form factors for better use. Russ writes, I would still get a tablet in 2022, especially a lot of OEMs are now coming out with their own tablets. If you're really into the Samsung game and you have not played with a Galaxy Tab, you're really missing out. So if you can combine a Galaxy phone and a Galaxy Tab, that combination is phenomenal. And you're working off of platforms that are syncing information really well. Samsung's ecosystem isn't as walled garden and as comprehensive as Apple's, but tell me you can't get a good Galaxy phone and a great Galaxy tablet for a lot less than what you would spend on a Fold, even factoring in some of the recent price cuts and the way that Samsung plays with resale value and that secondhand market. That's a compelling solution. I would even take it a step further. Why go with a Samsung tablet if you can go with the Samsung phone and get yourself like a Nex Dock? So then you can flip it into tablet mode or in laptop mode, and you always have a charged phone when you're done using the laptop-y kinds of things, because Dex is amazing. But I'm over this idea that if we're talking about a Motorola and Ready 4, we were talking about LG with Screen Plus. Well, average consumers don't do things with their phones, so desktop modes aren't worth it, and who should ever buy a laptop dock? And then you show off Dex. Oh, well, Dex is just amazing. It's funny how we always give Samsung the credit. I desperately want to play with a Huawei just because I remember, and I have my Honor over there on the side, and I liked Huawei's desktop mode in EMUI even better than Dex. But I don't know. Maybe I can convince TK to like trade me that P50 that he's using just for a week. I'll drive it back up to his place. We'll have to see. I don't think we'll be able to pull that off. Yeah, I mean, here, let me pull this up from McCorcoran. I do wonder if the Note 20 Ultra price will go down on the resale market. Hopefully, honestly, it might hold its value as the last Note with expandable storage. I hope it does. I hope it stands in the face of Samsung's resale strategy. That's what I mean. Like, we're going to be talking about some of the carrier news that came out, Verizon and AT&T. Man, the games that we're playing with pricing and financing, I think this market is slowly starting to implode, where the whole notion that here in the United States, you shop through a carrier and you can get yourself a $1,000, $1,200 phone. It's only going to be $50 more a month on your monthly bill. I think that idea is deflating slowly because the influence of carriers is pretty toxic, but I think it's starting. And so when we start looking at what these things are really worth and how incremental the changes have been over the last two to three years, I think this is an important idea for consumers to keep in mind. 5G is going to be a ratchet. It's a turn of the screw to try and get people locked into longer contracts, longer financing deals. You've got to flip your phone. Aren't you scared about the 3G being disabled for fallback on phone calls? You need VoIP support or VoLTE support. That's the kind of stuff that I feel like it, we got to keep it in mind, because I don't feel we're doing a very good job of really talking about this market holistically. Oh, everyone say hey to Barry Johnson. Hey, everyone, I apologize in advance for the lack of reply. Have to engage lurk mode for an hour. It's okay. I'm just glad you could hang out with us. This is really nice. So I rambled on extra there, so we got a little extra commentary on the housekeeping. But like I said, I put out a lot of stuff, and some of my hottest of hot takes over the last week. Again, I mean, like, man, that Spotify video. See, the thing that drives me nuts, and I had a whole bunch of people like, well, I mean, audio quality isn't the only thing to consider. You're going to lose me on that argument. If you're talking about a music streaming service that is out there trying to be controversial about podcasting and has not improved the audio quality, go to Apple Music, go to Amazon HD, go to Qobuz, go to Tidal. And the prices have all kind of honed in on something pretty close. So if you go to, I want to say Tidal still charges more for higher quality streaming, if you want masters. You go to Qobuz, and you if you can, I mean, I'm not saying everyone can do this. One, it's region locked, so there are a bunch of regions where Qobuz doesn't work. But if you go to Qobuz and you have the means to pay for the year, it's only 80 cents more expensive per month than Spotify Premium. And you get at least CD quality or higher in that price. There is no higher price tier to get 24-bit FLAC files. It's all included. I feel that's a great reason to jump ship. The catalogs are about the same size now. The quality is substantially higher on Qobuz, and they pay the artists better. That's a win-win-win. And that's 80 cents more a month. I feel like that's a pretty good argument. Spotify stands did not seem to agree with me. All right, moving into the news block, we've got, like I said, the news block is really heavy this week. There's a lot of funky Apple news. I feel like this is the kind of stuff that often flies under the radar, and we don't showcase as often in comparison, in contrast to the marketing image that Apple puts out there. So this is going to be another one of those Juan hates on Apple for a good chunk of the news block because he hates popular things. But I haven't seen as much noise being stirred up about this kind of stuff. So we're going to start off. I was very surprised to see this pop up in my news feed. It showed up in my news feed yesterday, but it was actually published February 4th from the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Apparently, they're about to get involved in the Apple Epic lawsuit in a very big way. EFF to appeals, Apple's monopoly does not make users safer. Let me scroll down to this. In the antitrust case, Epic Games versus Apple, in which the maker of Fortnite alleges that Apple has an illegal monopoly in iOS app distribution, a court ruled that since customers supposedly understand Apple's policies and buy iPhones anyway when they could choose an Android phone, there's competition in the market for distributing apps, and Apple's ability to wield monopoly power is checked by competition from Android. The court got it wrong. That's why EFF, along with attorneys from Constantine Cannon, filed an amicus brief siding with Epic Games in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, explaining that the trial's court decision was contrary to law and defied the reality of mobile software distribution. The decision incorrectly presumed that if customers are aware of the restrictions when purchasing a device, then competition in that market is sufficient to rein in Apple's anti-competitive conduct and users are not locked into the App Store. That's pretty big. They're filing, directly getting themselves involved in a pretty big case on the future of software distribution and mobile markets. And again, they're focused focusing this a bit more on sort of the Apple side of this equation, because someone please correct me in the comments. I don't believe that the Google case, Epic versus Google, has come to nearly the same conclusion. I might have that wrong. But this one to me was kind of a big deal. I go to the EFF for a lot of news and for like opinion pieces and editorials, especially on, you know, topics like net neutrality and right to repair and privacy and security issues. And I think if you've been watching this my podcast or any kind of similar consumer electronics sort of talking shows. Oh man, I am foggy. I'm on so many antihistamines. You've been following these types of news. I feel like there's a feeling about how Apple does business that isn't, you know, it's not totally illegal. It's not completely a monopoly, but that the way Apple has locked in and made a divisive ecosystem and divisive services feels like something we should be concerned about in sort of the greater consumer electronics market. So this one's pretty big. This is one to keep an eye on as other organizations get involved and as we start to see these appeals fly back and forth. And we're also seeing these actions taking place in other countries. At some point, I do believe there's going to be pressure on Apple to change up part of their business model. I feel their immediate step is going to be very similar to what they did. I can't remember where. I believe it's somewhere in the EU where they're going to allow for alternative payments. So, you know, if you don't want to pay through the Apple App Store, you can pay through another type of service. But that Apple is still going to take a 30% cut of any financial traffic. Maybe it was France. Please correct me because I'm probably wrong. But the way that action came down still just opened up this huge loophole for Apple to go, okay, well, if you don't want us to take a 30% cut directly through the Apple App Store, then we'll take a 30% cut of anything that you process payments on, which I feel misses the point of why we've been complaining about the App Store. But that's how law works. So it's really messed up. I also just wanted to highlight this one, not because it's such a bad look for Apple. This is more just a little kind of embarrassing for folks who obviously don't understand how podcasting works. But it's just funny. It's such a not a good look. Even The Verge had to write a snarky editorial about this, that Apple is misrepresenting one of their services because of user feedback. And again, it's just one of those things. You look at it and you go, hey, that's really not a good look. You should probably be more clear with your consumers, to the point where even The Verge is kind of going, hey, that looks bad. There's like almost no excuse for this. We're The Verge. We tried. I wonder how Apple Podcasts suddenly became a 5-star app. And it's easy because Apple is taking the podcast reviews that people mistakenly leave on the podcast app. So people hear from their favorite podcasters, hey, don't forget to rate and review this podcast. It helps us on these subscription platforms. And so they go and they just leave a review, a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app in the App Store. So you see all of these 5-star reviews, and The Verge even like copy pastes, this is my favorite podcast, such valuable advice for parents. Absolutely the best podcast in Nigeria, 5 stars. I find you to be a very down-to-earth, genuine person. You have remarkable guests. All of these are reviews of podcasts at 5 stars. They're not reviews of the podcast app. If you sort of look back on the history of Apple Podcasts, it's not gotten positive reviews. Apple Podcasts was floating at around a 1.8-star review, which is bad. That's really bad. It is absolutely not the podcast app I would recommend people on iPhones use. But suddenly, Apple shows up as a 4.6 star app. How funny is that? Well, I mean, that's just crazy. What an amazing improvement. Apple is so good at software and services. Totally salvaged their podcast app and changed all of these people's... No, it's just because all of the people on Apple Podcasts, they don't really know how to use podcasting apps, and that's the result. It's just a really silly look. But I do want to throw a quick shout out. My buddy Jeff, El Jefe Reviews, tier one sub. Thank you so much for jumping in, subscribing, supporting the stream and the channel. I really appreciate it. It's a big help in keeping the podcast going weekly, especially with, you know, some of the news that we'll talk about at the end of the show, where I'm probably going to be leaving YouTube with any kind of replay for this show. So, not a great look. Again, Apple is so good at software, they should be able to fix that on its own merits. Instead, they're just kind of purposely misrepresenting their own podcast app. Apple's a really good marketing company. So, Aditya, it's not a dirty apple, it's a rotten apple. Bam! Ooh, headline! All right, moving right along. Who remembers, you know, like, I'm sure many of us have had those experiences. You're grown up, kids in the neighborhood, getting together to play. Maybe it's the kid who had all of the game consoles, but he was kind of an insufferable little brat. If he didn't get his way, he'd throw a temper tantrum, and then you're like, I'm going to take my ball and go home, and you don't get to play with my toys anymore. Which apparently is now the marketing and business strategy for Facebook. As we see, the company called Meta considering shutting down Facebook and Instagram in Europe. Now, I need to see in chat, drop an F in chat if you think this is a stupid, hollow, empty threat from Facebook that they will never act on because they don't actually have the leverage to execute a strategy like this opposite EU regulators. So drop an F in chat. I see Simon, I see Destador, I see JMX Warrior, Gabaletta, Jeff, Blue Man Rule, Aditya, Kenox, Rami, JMX, JMX again, Streamy Boys with a triple F. TK even dropped an F. This seems highly unlikely that they would try to attempt anything like this. So the story is really interesting. I have to point out, my NVIDIA is really tracking my chin right now. Yeah, like, ooh, look at that. I should start doing like crunches as the camera moves up and down. That's not helpful for audio listeners of the podcast. This is really interesting. There are some of these really funky differences. We talk about certain companies in one way and we talk about other companies in another. I feel it was a consumer benefit when more Chinese manufacturers started setting up data distribution centers for more localized data in light of regulations. Instead of piping all of our information back to servers located in one region, they were forced to start setting up data processing centers closer to the customers that were using their services. I feel this was a boon for the BBK brands. I feel that this has actually improved some of the software and security issues I might have with Xiaomi as a platform. There was this sort of Asian panic about your data leaking to Chinese servers. I feel that starts to get a little ugly. I feel it starts to border on xenophobic, the way that we talk about those types of data policies. For some reason, we've got some people out there supporting Facebook saying, hey, we don't want to have to set up servers in the EU. We want to pipe all of the EU data that we gather and send it back to the United States, even though we're technically an Irish company so that we can hide under tax sheltering laws. So they don't want to pay appropriate taxes for their revenue and their income in the EU, but they're an Irish company. But they want to send all of the data back to servers in the United States. And that falls afoul of EU regulators. So I feel if we were so concerned about Huawei data distribution, BBK data distribution, Xiaomi and ZTE data distribution, why would Facebook get a pass? Why would Facebook get any special consideration from the EU for handling the data of EU citizens? That to me should be simpatico. Like that's an oranges to oranges kind of comparison. So spend the money, set up some data centers, do right by local regulators. You're still going to profit a ton off of all of that user data. At least try to pretend you're in the business of securing people's data. At least put up the token effort that you claim to care about, instead of trying to, oh, and we don't get our way in funneling EU citizen data to the United States. We're going to just leave. Because no one's going to be sad about that. Overwhelmingly, the response to these articles has been hilarious. I mean, over the top, please leave. Go. We will not miss you. We will find any other service that is willing to play ball by EU regulators. We absolutely cannot give Facebook any special considerations for this. This is absurd if we do. But again, money talks. So I'll be curious to see if EU regulators are in any way swayed by some of these arguments.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
LFA, I'm not buying it. I'd call Meta's bluff. Hell yeah, I would. Simon says, Hypno, we're so miffed at making fewer billions and being held to account, so we will just quit making billions in several markets. If I were a Facebook shareholder, I would not be happy with the recent turns from this company. The metaverse is a huge albatross on their expenditures. What is it? Like their R&D department has spent like $10 billion over the last year, something crazy. It's not that high. I'm pulling a number out of my butt there. I shouldn't be exaggerating. But again, it's like just nothing but consistent losses for the company. Or also like we factor in like VR strategies. Apparently, if you sell something like an Oculus at an extreme loss to try and make it up on user data and software licensing, it doesn't always improve your company's bottom line. Apparently, that hasn't been going super great either. You know, we're trying to lock the VR market. At some point, they're going to start ratcheting up those prices because they'll need to. Gabaletta from Metaverse. We're going to pull Facebook and Instagram if we don't get to do whatever we want. Don't threaten me with a good time. Aditya Anil, I mean, there's always farther we can go down. Aditya says, never thought I could lose any more respect for Facebook. I mean, come on. I want to say nicer things about Facebook, but they keep doing things like this. Yeah, Streamy Boys, people concerned about data in the hands of the Chinese, but they're using TikTok. McCorkerin, I would pay Facebook a monthly fee to go away. Oh, Snorkel, that's a pretty good one. Face Palm Book. So bad. So yeah, that was absolutely one of the top stories we had to talk about this week. Because again, it's so funny. It's so funny that would be a corporate PR response And they have to know the image of their company is so garbage right now. They know that their company is so garbage right now because they changed their name to Meta. This is a joke. It's bad comedy and it's hilarious. I don't enjoy the sick thrill of Schadenfreude that often. This is one I'll be watching just to see. Let's see how they backtrack on this one in another week of terrible press. This is like watching a car crash happen in slow motion. All right, moving right along. This one's real quick. Again, we were just talking about Facebook. They had some issues. They wiped out a huge chunk of their market value. Zuckerberg's valuation, like his own personal finances, took like billions of dollars hit just on the market reporting on Facebook losses. And at the same time, this one was kind of sneaky and quiet. Snap is profitable. Snapchat made $23 million in positive net income on $4.1 billion in quarterly revenue. This is the first time Snap has made money on their service. And this is really interesting because there were the same kinds of concerns that Snap would lose money on, like, Apple's new privacy features for the iPhone. Well, as we covered on this show a couple months back, actually now, the whole Apple privacy filter thing is largely for show. It blocks very specific kinds of data tracking and profiting off of user data. They seem increasingly hard-targeted on messing up Facebook. Like, almost like this strategy was built to kind of like zero in on just a couple players and hurt them financially. Remember, Apple does not bully, but they can be hyper-punitive to certain competitors in certain spaces. I'm just saying. Snapchat seems to have weathered those issues and come out the other side making money for the first time in the company's history. So it allowed them the ability to say, hey, we care about privacy. We're really focused on supporting our creators. We're, you know, focusing on these initiatives. People aren't snapping directly between their family and friends as much anymore, but they are viewing a lot more of their, not professional, but I mean, they've got like a curated list of creators that they put out more publicly. Everyone seems to be kind of bandwagoning on a more TikTok style of video distribution. Facebook's new initiative is to copy TikTok more. TikTok harder, just like YouTube, which is dumb because there's already TikTok. But this is just kind of an interesting little quirk of the market. A number of companies that have weathered some of the iOS changes are coming out the other side not really affected, or they're finding that they're able to grow their business on top of that. So it's just kind of an interesting thing to keep an eye on. Again, like, Facebook is so bad at their core mission, they can't figure out their monetization strategy around one largely token change in iPhone security. Again, if I were a Facebook stockholder, shareholder, I would be very concerned about the fundamentals, the health of this company. They seem to be really bad at what they do. Excuse me. I meant to click the mic. I'm trying to, if you hear me just sort of like the audio kind of vanish for a second, it's because, like, again, I'm all goopy and stuff. I'm trying not to let my biology happen on microphone. So, in other news of sort of corporate failures of vision and leadership, can we file this one under disappointed but not surprised? I feel like this is just an ongoing trend with a number of services, but it kind of lines up with a certain feel on Google's product strategy. And so if I click back over into screen share... Report, this is coming by way of Kotaku, by the way, report Google quietly ditching Stadia. So the title of this article, not completely accurate. So Business Insider reports that Google is going to be demoting Stadia within the services sector of Google's larger business. So hold on, I've got it right here. Stadia boss Phil Harrison is now reporting to Google's vice president of subscription services instead of directly to Google's hardware boss, Rick Osterloh. So this is a quiet way to change up what Stadia might represent. And instead of being its own console platform, games distribution platform, instead what they're looking at is being the backbone streaming solution for other products out there. So one of the companies floated was Peloton. And that makes a lot of sense. Google has shown that this tech has legs. The way that we stream and interact, we can gamify certain things and we can reduce latency. We can really improve this from a gaming standpoint. That has a wide impact on a number of other live stream, live services, and something like a Peloton makes a lot of sense. So instead of Peloton investing or using their own cloud services or trying to figure out how to build these technologies, they can get a box of just plug and play components from Google to really maximize this, and that's what Stadia is likely to become. Now, there's been a tweet from the Stadia Twitter account saying, hey, we're still all in on gaming, don't worry about that, there's still gonna be a thing for that. But I think over time, Google's investment in Stadia tech is likely going to go to backing up other services. Why reinvent the wheel if you can kind of lease a certain kind of server quality directly from a company that has all these data centers? And I think that makes the most sense long term. You know, I still keep saying I feel like the one player who hasn't shown their cards yet is Valve. I want to see what Steam has to do, because I already have a huge Steam library. I would happily pay them $10 a month to continue progress on a game through a web browser anywhere I have a decent data connection. That to me would be a huge shot in the arm for the game streaming market. And it would be cool if Steam didn't have to reinvent the wheel. They could go, they could work out a deal, an arrangement with Google. They could both get money for streaming a catalog versus actually supporting all the servers and infrastructure. I would be a happy customer, and we'd have good competition in the space against Nvidia and Microsoft also developing these kinds of cloud gaming platforms. So that to me seems like the right play. I don't know that we ever would have... It was clear we were never going to... really support a Google console initiative. It's just like buying a game console. You buy the game and then you pay us every month to play the game. Just doesn't sit well. And especially with the optics of Google as the force behind it, I understand the pushback, the wait and see. So many new technologies die because we're so anxious about like, oh, but it's a first gen and I don't want to be a beta tester. I get all that, but I feel like Google did a very good job of showcasing the tech. They just couldn't win the hearts and minds for them to be an actual console competitor. And again, we're seeing hardware is tough. Still haven't gotten any word from Steam or Valve about Steam Deck. I hope that's going to start making a little bit more noise soon. We're seeing some people showing it off. A few folks have gotten like demo devices and early access devices. But yeah, I mean, like Nvidia is quietly ramping up, improving the quality of their streaming service. Microsoft has the catalog argument locked up pretty well for Game Pass. Stadia just couldn't carve out a specific niche where they could compete against those market forces. So Billy Quizboy, one, you have Steam integration like that with GeForce Now. And you do, but I want it direct through Steam. And there are some games in my Steam library that have been pulled from GeForce Now because of licensing and marketing agreements. And this stuff gets really complicated. So I feel like if there's a marketplace that can kind of move the needle on that, I feel like Steam actually has a little bit more leverage than Nvidia does in that direct-to-consumer game relationship. Mm-hmm. And from, I mean, this isn't a bad point. You can, from a Corcoran 3, you can get some utility out of Stadia as a backup option. AT&T gives Stadia Pro out for 6 months with a new contract these days. I've only ever bought one $9 game from Stadia. So this is also one of the things that I think is going to be interesting to watch. I'm hoping we see more direct competition coming from mobile. So from phone and tablet support for game developers, because there are a ton of really good older console and PC ports on Android. And it's becoming the sort of the last life of a game. Once it's, you know, published, an indie developer puts it out, it makes some noise on Steam, maybe it gets added to Game Pass or gets and also a console life at the same time. And then like a year later, it shows up on Android as kind of the last run of that. So there's like a backup argument to be had for a service like Stadia where you can play it anywhere you want. There's also a backup argument for just empowering developers to put their games directly on our phones. You know, this market kind of works, and it's shocking, but I feel like a game like Dead Cells, we're a DLC behind. We're still waiting on the newest DLC update on Android. But the gameplay on Android rivals any other portable way that you would play that game. Especially when you consider, like, it's not hard. That game is so well optimized. Can you play Dead Cells 90 frames per second on any other handheld? I mean, it looks real good. So take your beautiful phone AMOLED display. That is actually kind of the best way to play the game on the go. You might just need to add a controller if you're really twitchy about using on-screen controls. So that to me is, again, it's sneaky and it's a little older, but I feel like the gaming market is far from decided at this point. From Ted, Stadia is a great service, but I wouldn't in good conscience tell someone to invest in building up their game library on Stadia. I feel like the wait and see was brutal on Google. I still do feel like some of that early commentary was a little unfair. But again, it was on Google to win those hearts and minds. And increasingly, it's hard. It's hard kicking up something new and not having the entire internet rage and backlash until you prove it to consumers. And then all the techies go, but I knew it was going to be a success. This is a great idea. I always liked it, but I just had those tough critics. I had to keep it a buck. Miss me with that. It's always the opposite. If consumers go out and buy it in droves, then the reviewers suddenly see the light and understand what a great benefit it is. It's just lame. Oh, Gabaletta, this is absolutely true. I think Microsoft knew from the beginning that they would never beat Sony at their own game, selling consoles, but played the long game, and Game Pass now is a very good contender to a console where you can basically play it on any platform. Absolutely. I mean, I was even saying this at the beginning of this last console generation where, you know, we're talking about Stadia and xCloud and all these people are like, oh, I don't know, this is Microsoft. I bet the PlayStation's going to be better. And you're like, you're completely missing game as subscription model. Microsoft has this on lock. And so we're seeing everyone now really freaking out about the Microsoft catalog stapled to a service. What? I mean, Game Pass is still $10 a month. I mean, come on. Game Pass is cheaper than Netflix to be the Netflix of gaming. That's really intense for how much games cost these days. All right, let's get this out of the way. Just a real quick story, another nail in a coffin. If you were really hyped up about getting a new BlackBerry anytime soon. I think the market just got a little bit more complicated for bringing this hardware to market. I said market too many times there. From Barron's, barrons.com. I think this is the first time we've used one of their articles on the show. BlackBerry will sell its patents linked to mobile phones for $600 million. That is so sad. So the licensing agreements on BlackBerry and the requirements on manufacturing a BlackBerry phone are pretty extreme. I still think techies are dumb. And I mean this in all kind of like kindness and respect. Maybe I should just say ignorant. Techies are ignorant as to what the goal was on a BlackBerry phone. So when TCL was making the key, it's kind of like a Surface Duo. TCL was not interested in making the best Android they could. They were interested in making the best BlackBerry they could. So you go and you complain, but I'm not getting all the Android updates. They didn't care. And I mean that in love. They hyper-customized a build of Android to be ruthlessly security-focused, and they would update where they found security issues on that platform. But the Android operating system was never the perk. The perk was BlackBerry security, BlackBerry services, and you still had access to Google and Android apps to close the app gap, which sounds a lot like picking up a Surface Duo. It's not about getting the most familiar, bestest Android phone. It's about getting a Surface in your pocket. It's about getting a hardware keyboard with great security. And to date, I still believe, and someone please correct me on this if I'm wrong, I haven't honestly looked it up in a while, that the bounties for cracking the security on Android BlackBerries still has not been earned. So people paid into these bounties where, hey man, if you can find an exploit that we can get in there and we can crack it, we can root it, we can ROM it. I don't believe that's ever happened. So, you know, all these people freaking out about software updates, the mission was, can you make a corporate security grade device? And even though the keys are now fully out of any kind of support window, I don't think anyone's broken them yet. So please, someone let me know. I still have my red Key 2 over there. That's a museum phone forever. Like, I'm never letting that phone go. It was gorgeous. It was beautiful. It's probably not going to work on any carriers in a year, in a month. I don't know. But that to me is a very important idea. So all of the patents that BlackBerry has accrued, which I believe even a collection of, what was it, the Nortel? Was it Nortel? That they bought like $700 million worth of patents for mobility tech is getting mixed into this purchase price. So it's like a humongous devaluation of what this stuff was worth back when people had any interest in BlackBerry as a device manufacturer. So it's pretty intense. I would consider that to be a pretty big loss. And so now if like Onward Mobility, which I still think is kind of vapor, I really hope we see that they're able to put something out there, but the window of licensing BlackBerry technology from BlackBerry is gone. So now someone else has bought it. They're going to have to work out the licensing deals with a completely different entity. And someone who just spent $600 million is going to want to get their money back. I don't think this is good news for Onward. Ted is literally asking right now, is this good news for Onward Mobility? They can't buy it. If they can't get a phone out, they don't have the $600 million. That's not a... Juan, you can buy it. hold on, let me see. Delaware-based Catapult, which was formed solely to acquire BlackBerry's patent assets, has received a conditional commitment, $400 million from Toronto-based capital provider Third Eye Capital. A bunch of vultures are picking apart the carcass right now. So this isn't they're putting it for sale at $600. This is it sold for $600 to Catapult IP Innovations, backed by Third Eye Capital. Man, that all sounds like tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists too. Third Eye Capital? That sounds like Illuminati. I don't want to do that to the podcast. We should not do that. I'm going to back off that right now. yeah. Big Brother? Oh no, Onward Mobility didn't get the patents. The people on Shark Tank won't like the sound of that. Well, I mean, it obviously does, McCorkern 3. He writes, I don't think this affects Onward Mobility at all. I think they could still theoretically release a BlackBerry, but someone can correct me if I'm wrong. They can theoretically still release a BlackBerry. They now have to license or change their licensing agreement unless they already had a bulletproof contract in place mitigating any type of alteration to their licensing agreement by those patents and technologies being acquired by another entity. They will need to change the licensing agreements moving forward. So it depends on how good their contracts were and how good their lawyers are, whether or not those contracts will still be applicable to a change in this type of ownership. And I'm sure if they had any of those agreements in place, they are paying for some significant legal fees to chew through all of those contracts to make sure that everything's going to be fine. So it depends on what stage of the process they were in. So if they were prototyping and demoing and they still hadn't gotten a distribution deal yet, then they could be screwed. If they'd already paid into a licensing and distribution agreement, then they're probably fine. But considering the state that Onward Mobility was in when they started making noise about this, and they didn't even have a website, like their initial press release pointed to a Facebook page, I'm not confident that they had all of their ducks in a row to meet the legal requirements of a deal this complicated. But it's sad, because I would love to see a modern take on a BlackBerry, mid-ranger processor, multiple days of battery life, great for communication, tactile experiences for typing. Everything I loved about the Key 2 and why the Key 2 is still a phenomenal communicator even today. It's really sad. Tom from MySpace still holds out hope. I would love to go back to MySpace these days. I miss the old, old MySpace. Tom just wanted to teach us a little HTML. All right, we got one more story here. Give me one second. I'm going to drink some water, but I'm going to mute so that you don't hear all of the slurping. Your mic is muted. Are you trying to talk to your audience? Actually, I wasn't. So we were talking about carrier deals and how toxic this relationship is getting. And, you know, you go to AT&T or you go to Verizon, you see the price of a new phone, and it boggles the mind, $1,000, $1,200, $1,800. But you know what? Verizon wants to show you a smaller number. They want to show you a number carved up per month. And, you know, that little number, well, I could float 20, 30 bucks extra a month to own a really nice phone. That doesn't sound so bad, even though you're still paying full MSRP. The device is radically devaluing as soon as you own it. But, you know, if it's a reasonable monthly fee. Well, we need to make sure that those monthly numbers stay small. Because once you start climbing to like 50 bucks a month, well, that doesn't look like such a great deal, right? Again, consumers, I feel, are getting savvier to this notion of maybe I don't need to keep buying this stuff or flipping my older phones if they still work. So Verizon, AT&T, they're getting hip to that, and all of their new agreements will now carve up payments over 36 months. It's coming by way of Android Police. My buddy Jules Wang, wrote this up. Wong. It's a soft A, isn't it? Jules Wong. I did it again. Oh man, Jules, many apologies. Phone contracts aren't what they used to be, and one continuing to change, at least at Verizon. The wireless carrier has just extended its installment plan terms for all new device purchases from 24 or 30 months to 36 months. 36 months. That's the number that you see. And I feel like this is a clever little bit of consumer marketing. Well, you know, I'm only going to pay... Well, hold on. Let's just do the math here real quick. What would we say, a phone, an iPhone's like $1,100. So we do 1,100 divided by 36. That's $30 a month. $30, you know, that's not too bad. You could do $30 a month for 3 years. 3 years. I totally grok that the idea of the market right now, consumers are trying to hold onto their phones longer. Average ownership fluctuates between like 26 to 30 months, depending on what analysts you follow. So getting to 3 years is actually kind of a magical bullet point. But so many devices, after you start pushing into year two, require maintenance, repairs, a new battery, software becomes an issue. 3 years on a no-interest loan on a phone that is rapidly devaluing. And imagine that individual who's still upside down on a phone lease, getting into the end of their second year and thinking, you know, actually, I kind of want to flip it. I don't want to have to go and buy a new phone through this type of leasing program. Maybe I could just sell it, get some of that money back. No. The value of that on the secondhand market has been completely wrecked by phone trade-in deals. I mean, this is a concerning element in the way that businesses sort of handle their customers and how psychological this tactic has become. I mean, 3 years of 36 month phone leasing, just so that they can show you, you're only going to pay like $28 a month. Isn't that great? I mean, don't look at the fine print, but you're going to sign up for service and the phone is just taken care of for you. You walk out the door. If you have great credit, you don't even have to pay us anything. We'll just charge you $28 a month. We'll charge you tax on the whole phone. So that way you've got some skin in the game and, you know, you won't want to leave because you had to give us, you know, like $150 up front. But then after that, beautiful. It's great. I mean, man. Yeah, and McCorcoran, I mean, this was LG's strategy too, but McCorcoran writes, stuff like the Pixel 6 Pro, hard to find an unlocked version in the color you wanted. Well, the customer isn't a very good customer. If you're a smaller player and making in more limited batches, you have to sell those phones out. That's why OnePlus is doing these batches. 20,000 units in a batch, those get manufactured, those get shipped immediately to people who already put in money. LG, same thing. They learned in the sort of LG G8 days, doesn't help if you've got a ton of phones sitting on store shelves. You need to move those products. You need to sell them. So after the LG G8, we saw LG only selling to carriers. And it didn't matter. LG was happy. They made their money on the phones. They could keep just going on. Obviously, that didn't work out so well because we can see where LG is today in the mobile market. But if you're Google, you could make a ton of unlocked phones and have them sit around because people are here in North America are overwhelmingly more likely to buy their phone from their carrier. You make those locked carrier versions and those are moving. Those are selling. Those are gone. You sell them directly to Verizon and then Verizon has to take care of actually getting them in the hands of consumers. You're done. You've made your cash. That's the game. Mm-hmm. Sorry, let me just get through some of these comments here. Yeah, Ted, this is exactly the point. You're paying the full price of a phone over 3 years that by the end of that term has lost more than half of its value. Over 3 years, it's a bit more than half. It's probably closer to 2/3 if I'm trying to do my memory on things like Galaxy S10s and LG G8s. Only thing that person can do is trade the phone through the carrier. It's a lock-in and it's a pain point. You're not going to take all that extra energy to sell your phone or on the used market. You're just going to bring it back to the carrier. It's just so much easier and so much more convenient. And we can sign you up for another 3-year lease. If you're on a special plan, you can flip your phone by paying a lot of taxes on it every year if you want. And that's how the carrier market works. The tiniest bit of extra effort is promoted as being completely impossible and just hair-pullingly annoying and so difficult. wouldn't it just be easier if you gave us more money? Yeah, Gavaletta, the contract-free slang was always a sham. Absolutely true. And Snorkel, this is a biggie. As a Verizon customer for many years, I'm asking whether they'll now give us carrier-pushed software updates for 3 years. And as far as I know, that is not changing. So go and buy a Motorola through Verizon. I believe, at least the terms of this change in leasing, you're still only going to get one major operating system update. I believe that's still staying consistent. You get to own and pay for that phone for 3 years. I don't believe it's changing the main, like, core OS updates. Now, Verizon might be able to push out, like, you know, sort of the more radio management stuff, maybe there's some pressure on them putting out sort of security patches over a certain period of time. But as far as I know, there's nothing to suggest that the main policy of the manufacturer is going to be changed by this at all. I mean, you should, McCorkran 3, if you're into a carrier contract for 3 years, you should get 3 years of updates. I feel that's correct. The market doesn't bear that out. People are still going to spend their money. Again, it takes a bit of social pressure for people to care about those things and to encourage that kind of change coming from major organizations. All right, so that's going to do it for the news block. Like I said, the news block was a little longer this week. I just want to throw a quick shout out to the subreddit. We didn't talk about the subreddit much last week, but if you head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, you're going to find a vibrant community of folks sharing a very broad collection of articles and videos. There was even a plug from a manufacturer asking for anyone who was interested in research participation on an upcoming product that they're trying to make. They reached out to us directly, the mods on Glowing Rectangles, and I thought it sounded interesting. So, I really try to push back against people just dumping advertisements, press releases, and crowdfunding links. But this one sounded cool. Like, they were just asking for feedback, and if you wanted to participate, you could. We're starting to see this growth. Some of the top stories week to week are now written articles. They're starting to climb up in the ranks. And every week, I find someone on this subreddit that I did not know of before. So it's become a phenomenal discovery tool just for my own browsing. So just satisfying my own curiosity, my subreddit is super cool. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. I won. I took the top spot. My video, I dumped Spotify, why I chose Qobuz, the top upvoted article video post of the week. And then the second place was a great look at someone who has cribbed Windows 11 to run on a phone. So this is coming by way of B-Bomb. They've got 2.2 million subscribers, but this was a really fun video. If you're like me and you're very anxious about the future of Windows on ARM, I feel like this is the next step for Microsoft, is to get better app support, get better app compatibility, start looking at chipset compatibility with ARM processors, and then suddenly, it doesn't matter if you've got a Surface device. You've got something that can tackle a 5G radio, is incredibly powerful with low power requirements. Suddenly, Windows is just more ubiquitous. You don't have to have, you know, developers go out of their way to support a special build of Windows. It's just there. Give me one second. I'm gonna drink another sip of water here because my voice is getting a little weak.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Thanks, Juan Carlos, for allowing me to be part of your show. And I want to introduce myself to you guys. My name is TK Bay, and I've been doing YouTube for quite some time, almost 10 years now. And you can find me online by just looking for TK Bay, either on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook. But the general consensus is I'm a tech reviewer. I provide an interesting way of approaching tech by the same way you would actually go ask your friend for help. That's generally the consensus of how my channel runs. I review anything from Android, iOS, PC computers, scooters, basically, you know, drones, anything that you think of as consumer tech. I generally try to get my hands on it and share with you guys my opinions, and of course, any troubleshooting or even tips and tricks that can help you enjoy your tech even better. Again, thank you very much to Juan Carlos, but if you'd like to check me out, just look for at TKDSL8655 on Instagram and Twitter, or TK Bay in YouTube.
And let's see, we've got Ollie Nilsson, 12,000 subscribers, taking a look at shooting on the Xperia Pro I. We've got LaShawn, holla at your boy, checking out the Earfun Free Mini. And then right after that, we've got El Jefe Reviews, 73,000 subscribers, kicking the buttocks, checking out the Hybrid ANC Soundcore Life A2. Some really good looking true wireless earbuds. We got our buddy, Issa Does Tech, also checking out the Reno 7 and some carrier news, some camera comparisons, last week's podcast, the Skagen Falster Gen 6. And this was a video I just thought was really cute. Coming by way of Tech Valor, the Jetsons were right about the smart home. I think this is like a 90-second video. Just a really fun, cute little editorial looking at some of the tech of the Jetsons and how close we've gotten in modern-day consumer electronics. Kitchen tech, video calling, mobile tech. I thought she had a really fun take on just putting together a quick little thought video. So definitely some fun stuff to check out on the subreddit this week. We're getting great submissions. We need your upvotes. We need your sharing. We need your support. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. Any content you feel deserves more attention, does a great job of highlighting a community, of building a broader base of tech commentary, this is the place to share it. Please check it out. It's a labor of love. We keep it running every week. A very small group of moderators, but it's again, I come here to find new things because I know I'm going to get updates better than if I rely on YouTube to try and cultivate that content for me. We were talking during the Pajama Podcast. I did another week of just like going down deep dives and rabbit holes, ARGs and creepypastas and horror content. And my front page is still like, isn't it so funny when we do TikTok challenges? And I can't. YouTube is so bad. The algorithm does not do what it claims to do. It's trying to get me to watch the way that it thinks it's going to be more profitable in getting me to watch. And it's a bummer because if it were better at helping me find new horror channels, new movie review channels, video diaries, ARG content, spooky creepypasta, storytelling, I would be in. I would have a really hard time leaving that YouTube. But YouTube isn't interested in really maximizing my view time. YouTube is only interested in the lowest effort to keep people just generically clicking on whatever video comes next. So that's not what our subreddit aims to do for tech. What our subreddit aims to do for tech is to help you be more informed and to help send a little love to people that are out there making some really interesting content. reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. All right. So, like I said, we've got a really weak gadget block. So let me just chew through these. I've got three stories here. One of them is just going to be a way for me to ramble and rant for a little bit. And if you have any questions, if there's stuff that you want to talk about while I still have a Xiaomi Mi 11 Ultra, while I still have a Fold 3 in front of me, I've got my Duo, I've got my Pixels, I've got my Redmis. I did an absolutely miserable job of putting the screen protector on my my Redmi Note 11, so you can make fun of me for that. That could be kind of fun. I just wanted to highlight this one because, again, Apple marketing sells us one idea of reality that doesn't quite gel with the practical reality of owning a pocket computer in the year 2022. So this one is a little concerning. Exclusive from Reuters, iPhone flaw exploited by second Israeli spy firm, says sources. So a flaw in Apple's software exploited by Israeli surveillance firm NSO Group to break into iPhones in 2021 was simultaneously abused by a competing company, according to five people familiar with the matter. Quadream, sources say, is a smaller and lower profile Israeli firm that also develops smartphone hacking tools intended for government clients. Quote, people want to believe they're secure and phone companies want you to believe they're secure. What we've learned is that they are not, said Dave Eitel, a partner at Cordricep Systems, a cybersecurity firm. So every time we've on this show talked about browsers that leak data, about biometric security that can be bypassed, against exploits in the operating system or in specific applications, in the handoff between data that goes to your carrier or to your ISP, and all of the intermediary steps where that data can leak. That's the stuff that we know about. That's the stuff that has actually been reported. So when we hear about Apple, like, not really paying bounties for some pretty scary security holes and some pretty scary security threats, and those researchers go out and just publish the threat publicly to say, hey, we tried to go through the proper channel, we tried to go through Apple, and they didn't think this was very valuable, or they weren't willing to really live up to their obligation of paying security researchers to find these holes, we'll just make the information public. That's really bad. And so when these exploits are discovered by people with good intentions, that information makes it out to the community, that information makes it out, and people will eventually get a more secure product because of that collaboration. When those exploits are discovered by cybersecurity researchers with a direct monetary incentive to work with governments not sympathetic to our causes, and that's what their business model is built on, then that's less good. And that's kind of the place that we find ourselves in. A company like Apple can advertise and market privacy and security. We still have that stupid idea in the back of our brain, you know, Macs don't get viruses, from a commercial in the 90s, right? That's how powerful this marketing is. And the feel-good psychology of this marketing is very effective, but it's not real. And it's why ever increasingly we need to teach good online behavior, especially to our older relatives. You know, like how not to fall for misinformation on Facebook, how not to click on every link that pops up in your email, how to set up spam filters, how to not click on ads in your web browser. I mean, increasingly we need to really double down on these types of best practices for daily consumer life. Because we're seeing there's a bunch of scary stuff out there, which is the second article that I want to highlight here. This is by way of ZDNet, Microsoft. This Mac malware is getting smarter and more dangerous. Microsoft is making more noise about malware on Macs. Now remember, Macs don't get viruses, but the Mac malware update agent installs adware backdoor that could install other malware. So it's different than a virus, it's just malware on the Mac. Oh, I gotta scan through this here real quick. Microsoft flagged the malware now as it appears to be under continuous development. Today it installs an unusually persistent adware threat called AdLoad. But Microsoft cautions it could be used to distribute other more dangerous payloads in the future. For example, Microsoft found its makers host additional payloads on Amazon Web Services, S3, and CloudFront services. While it does require the victim to install an app masquerading as legitimate software, such as a video app or support agent promoted in ad pop-ups, the ability to bypass gatekeeper controls is significant. It can also use existing user permissions to delete evidence of its presence on a system. That's pretty intense. So, do we feel Apple needs to take charge of some of that conversation to share that information with their customers. Because we sure flip out when there's a security threat on Android. We sure flip out when there's a security threat in Windows. But every single time we see those threats pop up, we play this kind of game where we just expect Apple will do the right thing and they'll fix it really quickly. But it seems like it takes a lot of negative press to encourage that fast fix machine at Apple. If stuff is just kind of quietly simmering in the background for some of these exploits, nothing seems to happen. Or I shouldn't say nothing. I should say the pressure to make a big show out of their commitment to privacy and security doesn't seem to live up to their marketing in that same regard. So I was just some buyer beware. Just as we would recommend people be safe with their computers, I feel like there's that whole pushback. You cannot rely on an operating system to fully take care of, you know, like really bad user behavior. iOS cannot prevent you from doing things on your iOS devices that will get you in trouble. macOS cannot prevent you from getting yourself in trouble if you install things and you're not, you know, paying attention to where you're getting them from. It's a frustrating development. And again, with all of the messaging from Apple, I feel we've come to a point where Apple should step up and say, these are the best practices. Go to apple.com/security and you can see some of our top tips for better protecting your data and for protecting the data of your loved ones. And that's like the bare minimum. And yet that would still be just a little unseemly. But I thought Macs didn't get viruses. So they won't. They'll put up a giant billboard, you know, of an iPhone and a black billboard that says privacy on it. But that's about it. They won't actually tell you, like, oh, by the way, your iPhone can get hacked. It's a piece of tech. Oh, excuse me. I'm gonna splash water all over my face. I missed the mic, though, so that's good. So CompuCash, that's what's so funny. CompuCash writes, Apple sued the Israeli government the first time it happened. Thought they would have at least plugged the hole. So no, not only did they not plug the hole, guess what their response was to finding out about the second corporate organization cracking open iPhones? Anyone want to guess? Did Apple go out of their way to fix some of the issues in iOS? I'm sure they've been trying to. Did Apple work with those security researchers to try and improve their products? I mean, I'm sure those security researchers didn't want to affect their own business model, so they're probably keeping that data to themselves. Aditya, yeah, and Gabaletta, same. They're going to sue over their terms of service. They're violating Apple's terms of service. So it's not about really trying to protect users on the iPhone. It's not about making the product more secure. Well, you're using this exploit. That's against our TOS. So we're going to sue you. It's security through legal posturing. So, McCorkran 3, how much of a security risk is it to use a phone that isn't getting security updates anymore? Is this threat exaggerated? Retailers have it both ways by selling aging, unsupported phones, but also scaring you into upgrading. I would consider it to be a more significant threat the more you value your data. So having worked in DOE facilities where I got to play with like the first generation of biometric security on like iPacs and on Compaq tablets, the more valuable your data is, the more of a threat it is when you fall out of that support window. This is a multifaceted kind of conversation that I should really try to put together a video and maybe reach out to someone who really knows their stuff like Snubs. But a low-level consumer interest in protecting your privacy and protecting your information, I feel is largely satisfied with quarterly security patches and keeping your apps and services up to date. So Google Play services to me matters just as much as like getting security patches. But I don't feel in most cases that the immediate threat is, oh no, I'm on the December patch, but the January patch is out now, I'm unsecure. That's not really how, these things are so complicated now. The computers are so robust and so crazy nuanced. I don't feel like that's the main threat. But if you're working in an industry that has higher expectations of safeguarding data and you become a bigger target, then absolutely this becomes a much more dire situation. So I think it kind of comes from both sides. It's not just the manufacturer obligation to keep up with security patches. It's also the operating system, the developers. Carriers also need to get involved on securing their networks, but we also know that those leak like crazy because it's a major part of their business model. The FTC put out that commission on carriers snooping through everything you do on their networks. And then it's also on the user behavior. The value of the data makes you a bigger target. There is some security through obscurity in that point too. It's complicated. I wish there were a simpler answer to give your family and friends. Just you hope that you ride the update train decently well. You know, I feel in Android land, the main operating system update actually isn't better if your argument is security. I mean, look at all the patches and the bug fixes and the holes and recalling the update for Android 12. Well, that's an opportunity for bad actors to get in there and really kind of exploit some of the broken parts of Android 12 and figure out how to get around certain protections. So if you're on Android 11 with an up-to-date security patch, you're probably, I'm totally guesstimating here. I don't have data to suggest this one way or the other, but it's my guess, it's my hypothesis that a phone with good security patches, good updates from the manufacturer on Android 11 is likely a more secure device than bleeding edge Android 12 in a state where it's a little bit more vulnerable to attack. That would be my guess. So that to me is a part of a very broad and a very open conversation about best consumer practices and cybersecurity and data privacy and how all these things sound good, but behavior is always going, the human element is always going to be the weakest link of any like cybersecurity issue or cyber attack. From Matt, Apple Legal Security Plus Plus Pro and Virus Software out now. So McCorkorin 3, I mean, that is kind of the point. Technically, the Pixel 3 is no longer supported, but that phone would be safer than a lot of budget prepaid phones on the market today. And it's also why I kind of went off on that little BlackBerry rant. It depends on the threat. If you're talking about like getting, you know, access to a kernel or really, you know, sort of taking advantage of a terrible exploit that can get you deep into a system, an old BlackBerry, probably better than many newer, more premium phones. A phone that's just slightly outside of support, but was, you know, recently updated or had like a good window on a security patch. It depends on how much of a target it might be. It depends on what the exploits are or what the current holes in the security might be. And it's really difficult to know when you hold the phone, oh, this is a phone that has this kind of exploit. And if you go in through the Chrome browser, then you can install malware. Like, we just don't get that kind of reporting. And it would be nice if we could. And that's why we kind of just speak with these generalities about best practices. McCorkorin 3 also, because I plan on using my V60 well past its life cycle if I can. And Destinadore, how does Sony do in terms of security updates? They're pretty good. I don't remember what my Xperia 5 is on, but I was getting security patches long after on my Xperia XZ1 Compact. We're talking an older phone. I got security patches well past their operating system update stopped. And I feel like my Xperia 5 is reasonably close. Like, I want to say it's on November, but I could be wrong. And that's, you know, we have the Xperia 5 Mark III out. In that 2 to 3 year window, I think they're doing pretty good. There's a little bit of a lag on there. But they're in that kind of comfortable category of 2 years plus a little. Like, two really solid years of very good regular updates, patches, operating system updates and support. And then you can kind of count on some longer term security patch and bug fix software after that, but not a lot. I think the focus kind of drops off more aggressively after 2 years. Yeah, and Matt's saying on his Xperia 1 Mark II that they've been pretty consistent. So the last article that I want to focus on here has just been a really annoying talking point in the Android community. I don't know if anyone here is watching Technically Speaking. I really like Scott Peachy. He's a buddy. I very much enjoy lurking on his live streams. But he had Adam on Tech Odyssey, and they were just kind of going down this riff of OnePlus has lost their way, and OnePlus can't do anything right. And the OnePlus 10 only sold 20,000 phones when it first launched in China, and they've betrayed all of their fans. And this is, you know, they're going to slip and fall and be terrible. And I was typing comments so furiously in reply that Scott called me out, and he's like, well, why don't you just come on and talk? And I did. And then me and Adam had a really lovely conversation just about expectations and the enthusiast market and how OnePlus has exceeded expectations in every market. They've been growing substantially year over year, and they've never made more money as a label than they have over the last 2 years. So you can imagine my appreciation when another Android-focused publication that I feel the main like big smartphone publications have all kind of bought into this narrative of OnePlus's failures, the Oppoification of OnePlus is so tragic. They've betrayed their diehard fans. And then you get to see one of these little headlines pop up. OnePlus stopped chasing enthusiasts, and it seems to be paying off. Written up by Hadley Simons over at Android Authority, the manufacturer achieved over 520% yearly growth in North America. So, you're an executive at OnePlus. You look back at like the OnePlus 6 days to the OnePlus 7 days. They've got a carrier deal with T-Mobile. You see a spike in their sales. Thinking pretty good. Do you look at that era of OnePlus and think that's the trend we need to keep up with? Or do you look at OnePlus from 2020 to 2021 and see 500% growth with that strategy? What do you choose? Do you choose the cranky, loudest minority of a niche of Android enthusiast consumers who are never happy if you do anything to change up your business model, to grow, to evolve? Or do you look at a pivot towards more mainstream consumers, better budget devices in low-cost carriers, and still putting out competitive flagship devices? Again, a OnePlus 9 slotted in between a Galaxy S21 Plus and an S21 Ultra. It's that good. It was selling closer to the price of the S21 Plus. It had some features that could go toe-to-toe with the S21 Ultra. That to me is like the OnePlus mantra. That's a pretty good example. You know, that still lives up to the history, the emotional history of OnePlus. I don't know of many companies that are going to go out there and say, you know what, though? We could be making more money. We could be selling more phones. We could be putting our phones into more people's hands, showing, you know, a better distribution through Europe, showing greater sales across all of Asia and the EU. But I think what we need to do is sit back. Let's talk about passion. fashion don't pay bills, man. This is why we don't have LG in this space anymore. So I felt pretty good. I'm kind of fine with OnePlus betraying their hardcore enthusiasts, because the phones have never been better. I exist on the mission. I want competition, and I want to see these products improve, and even for some teething pains, like the OnePlus 9 on ColorOS, still one of the best performers on Android 12. Like, I've got my Pixel 6 over here. I've got the Fold 3 over here. It's pretty good. I like what what BBK brands are doing with Android 12. FunTouch looks pretty good. I desperately want my Vivo back from TK. This is looking really solid. So obviously there are some teething pains, some little bugs and gremlins that I hope are ironed out. But that's true of Galaxies on Android 12. That's true of Pixels on Android 12. That's the same. So if the company's making more money, I really can't care about people that read the headline of a TechAlter video and only focused on the one emotional word, betrayed. How enthusiast brands will betray you. I'm betrayed. I owned a OnePlus 3 and the company has lost its way. That's a bummer. I guess it's time for you to move on. Because OnePlus moved on. So I feel like they're probably fine. I feel like they're doing better. And that's really the important takeaway. The Oppoification of OnePlus is largely proving to be a good thing for their bottom line. I feel that's the direction they're going to increasingly go in the future. So, that was, by the way, I was teasing, like, I've got a little mini rant to go down. That was the mini rant. So we've got like 20 minutes here if we want to talk about some other stuff. Let's see. Oh, I saw a question in here. Hold on, let me scroll down. I accidentally scrolled all the way back up to talking about Apple and security. Simon says, Sibno just got the Pixel update. Matt Scott Peachy is a living legend. He's a really good guy. I really like talking with Scott. And again, me and Adam like sucked all the air out of his live stream. I kind of felt bad about that. I do that, and I really tried not to, but it's tough sometimes. Dave Burns, OnePlus betrayed me. I am betrayed, he said, from his OnePlus 9, probably. JMX Warrior, LG betrayed me by leaving the market. Yeah, that's pretty tough. Excuse me. We are betrayed. So, yeah, so Sam, Simon says, Hypno, the OnePlus 10 seems very iterative, but if it's good enough for Sam Apple, then why not? I really think the OnePlus label is going to become a mainstream sales focus for BBK, and the Oppo, the Find label, is going to be more of the experimental platform. You don't sell well in the United States pushing more expensive experimental features on phones. You just don't. So there's no point in trying to push OnePlus into doing that when you're just going to get a bunch of people, it's too expensive, and you should never pay for gimmicks unless the gimmick is from Samsung, and then it's not a gimmick because Galaxy. And you can miss me with that. It makes me sad because you pick up a Vivo, and the amount of R&D that's gone into the photography capabilities of that phone is absolutely incredible. And it seems like Oppo is going to be picking up some of that camera focus from the Vivo X70 Pro Plus. And it's formidable. We all praise Pixels for having like really good night sight and low light capabilities. And what that Vivo can do with low light images in a fraction of the time of a Pixel with the Tensor really firing on all cylinders is nothing short of spectacular. So that's kind of a bummer where I feel like OnePlus is going to be sort of a bread and butter brand. The Nords are going to do really well in North America. The mainstream, the more premium and expensive phones are probably still going to be in this like 20-to-1 sales ratio. For every 20 Nords they sell, they'll sell one OnePlus 10 Pro. Kind of like luxury car brands from more mainstream car manufacturers. Like, what, Lexus still, I mean, Toyota still outsells Lexus like 11 to 1 or something like that. I think that's going to be the same. I'm looking at the OnePlus 10 Pro specs, and I don't see anything that seems really controversial. The one that makes me sad is the ultra-wide camera. The sensor is going to shrink to provide a more warped and more fisheye bold field of view. That can be fun to shoot with, but if you've ever shot on a OnePlus 9 ultra wide, that camera is remarkable. The OnePlus 9 Pro ultra wide camera sensor is larger than the main sensor on an iPhone 13 Pro Max. And that was such a brilliant feature. You had 8K video recording, you had 4K 120. I mean, the OnePlus 9 Pro is an absolute monster. And you have to be really bad at tech and really bad at photography to pick up that phone and that camera and go, "Oh, just the photos just don't look as good." I mean, I have to use that voice for you because that's the extent of your familiarity with OnePlus. And if that really was your experience, then you're really probably not good at this stuff. Allowing for the occasional, phone that got sent out broken from the manufacturer. So, I really feel like overlapping, putting more development into ColorOS for both Oppo and OnePlus, really merging those labels, but focusing on a more mainstream approach to OnePlus. It's basically going to be their iPhone clone, right? The features and the layout and the form factor all kind of line up with the OnePlus 10 is going to be like the iPhone 13, and the OnePlus 10 Pro is going to compete against the iPhone 13 Pro Max, right? That's kind of their thing. And if they can cut $200 off the iPhone price and still keep a stupid fast charger in the box, then I think OnePlus is going to find competitive success in the premium tier. It's just never going to be the same kind of sales numbers that we see from the Nord. So it's it's fun stuff. So I got a question here. The Corcoran 3, couldn't you also argue that Samsung has abandoned the enthusiast market by similar logic? I feel some of those arguments would be similar, but no, Samsung is always different. So anything you would criticize Google for, anything you would criticize OnePlus for, well, Samsung did something similar, but it's different. There's a tiny little difference that I'm going to nitpick out of this so that I can make sure that my relationship with Samsung PR is maintained and I still have early access to the most profitable videos that we can produce on YouTube. And it's okay that I pick on other companies like Google. I can tell Apple and Samsung fans that it was good that they didn't buy a OnePlus. You know what I'm saying? OnePlus betrays their customers. You Sam Apple people, together, you're doing it right. Yeah, or someone's gonna say it's fake news. Oh, it's fake growth. Simon says Hypno. OnePlus unpacked, 28% more betrayal. I'm catching up with the chat. I'm way behind on the chat. So, someone was asking, Sveticus, can you run two game apps at the same time on a Duo? So let me. I've got my Duo. I had to boot it up. It wasn't booted up. But let's see. Two games at the same time. What games should we? So I can do Gobble as a Boggle clone, and then let me do Dots as like a little solitaire dot matching. Oh, I haven't actually played Dots here. Oh, no, I've got to play some Dots here real quick. Those of you listening to the audio version of this, you're not missing anything because I'm not holding it up to the screen. I'm literally ignoring my chat and playing one of my favorite solitaire games. This is terrible, terrible, terrible podcasting. So here's one of my favorite Boggle clones side by side. One of my favorite little just dot matching games. We can do that. What would also be? I've got Dead Cells. Let me load up Dead Cells and see if anything else can load side by side. So I've got Dead Cells. And then, now this one might get funky because some of these more like landscape and action-y games get weird. And let me also, you know, like, hey, while I'm playing Dead Cells and I'm platforming in between like boss fights and stuff, maybe I also just want to play some silly, like some solitaire. Like in between really frenetic action on Dead Cells, I can also play some Klondike, you know, some three card. And so that works brilliantly. Now, I would never do two games at the same time unless I were trying to cheat in a game of chess. So you could do that. I mean, if you wanted to be that guy, you could play a friend in an online game of chess, and then you could mirror your moves in a different chess app on the other screen, and you could just wipe the floor at them with some of these like chess programs that play chess really well. Same thing with Go or any other type of strategy or board game. You could be playing like Words with Friends, and then also having like an active library for all of your Scrabble tiles going on the other panel. What I do, the bad habit that I'm in, I absolutely love playing Dead Cells on a duo because of how thin the duo is. But then on the second screen, on the upper screen, I should say, I stream video. So I'll have like a documentary going, almost kind of podcasty style, but I can kind of look up and see, or I can push pause on the game very easily and see what's going on with the video. That's my bad habit. So I almost always have some kind of video streaming in addition to whatever activity, game, or, you know, like if I'm writing an article or if I'm responding to a live chat, punching through my emails, even on a regular phone screen, I almost always have a docked video in the upper quarter of my phone. So the duo for that is absolutely brilliant. I love doing that on a duo way better than I ever liked sort of using the Fold. Because on the Fold, to get that same kind of aspect ratio, you've got to keep it in portrait orientation and play on the bottom half and then dock something to the top half. But then you're always holding it perfectly flat. So this is now a totally flat slate. And that's how you're sort of gaming half screen and watching a video half screen. Whereas on the Duo, that is, you know, turned sideways. So the hinge can be angled so that you're gaming on the bottom screen and watching a video on the top screen, and you can angle it away from the lights or use it to kind of shade against my top-down lighting. And that experience to me looks a lot better. So yeah, that kind of flexibility is sort of core to the Duo. It's kind of like baked in. You're not really ever going to span an app on the Duo. I think that looks like garbage, but I don't need more space for one app. I need smarter space for two apps running at the same time. And that's like, if you're into multitasking, that's why the Duo is still, I think, the top solution. Again, now that LG is gone and we don't have dual display from LG anymore, the Duo now takes the crown as the premier multitasking kind of solution. Aw, Kappa Cash saying, that was a nice live stream with you and Adam. Thank you. Again, we're really snarky with each other, and I always feel bad because I feel when I show up in someone else's live stream or when I'm lurking in their comments, I don't think other people in the comments always know my relationship with the streamer, and sometimes I just look like a total asshole. If I'm saying something snarky or if I'm correcting them on a piece of information that I don't think they have right, they don't know that I've got this huge smile on my face because I'm engaging with a friend. And it looks real bad sometimes. So I was really glad, you know, I got face-to-face. I haven't just had a chance to speak with Scott or Adam in a really long time. And it was just kind of nice. It was like a couple friends catching up. And we got real nerdy. Like neither of us are at the level of, like, Gary Explains. But we were going into, like, SoC fabrication techniques, the difference between Exynos and Tensor chips. We were getting into clock speeds versus core counts versus the type of cores, the ARM reference design cores. Like, it was kind of one of those soul-replenishing conversations just because I like to learn about really advanced tech, too. And Adam was a really good guy to bounce that kind of stuff off of.
Hey, podcast listeners, I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to SomeGadgetGuy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
From Russ9123, Juan, how is USB 2 compared to USB 3.1 and above in terms of data transfer? So I haven't measured in a really long time, so I don't have that memorized. But when I pull photos and videos off of a phone to edit on my workstation, USB 3 powered phones are anecdotally much faster at pulling that data off. Again, when you're going over an MTP protocol, Windows won't always give you your data transfer speeds. So I can't measure. It's harder to measure consistently. What I have to do is set up a really big file transfer to the phone that's always consistent, and then I can time how long that data transfer takes. I don't do that because it takes a long time to set up. Where I feel one of the bigger advantages of using USB 3 on most phones is your ability to radically expand on your accessories. So when you have proper USB 3, USB OTG support on an Android phone, it's really easy to plug in a laptop hub and get memory card, dual USB ports, Ethernet and video out. Like one $40 laptop hub can give you a laptop's hub's worth of components, memory card access. There are a whole bunch of other things that you can add really easily through that one cable connection and still charge your phone. This is the huge difference between a Lightning connector and a proper USB 3 device connection. So that to me becomes the bigger draw. The file transfers do get faster, but it's harder for me to quantify exactly how much faster they might get because we're also talking about mobile chipsets and that performance isn't necessarily an oranges to oranges comparison against proper computers also sending files over USB 3. You do get the full support of USB 3 on a phone though, with the exception of the Pixel, which doesn't have video out, and that drives me crazy. It drives me nuts on a Xiaomi, on a Mi 11 Ultra. I desperately want my Vivo back because it had really good support for video output. The Duo finally got, on Android 11, the Duo 1 now has a reasonably good desktop mode that got activated. The desktop mode on the Duo 1 is cute because it acts like a third screen of your home screen. It's slow and it's kind of twitchy. It is not ready for mission critical applications, but it's an intriguing step in. It doesn't look like the Android desktop mode. It looks like another panel on the surface. Like if you turned your Duo into a trifold, your monitor connected to that, connected to the Duo kind of becomes a third panel, which is pretty sweet. It's almost like you get a Surface Trio, if that makes any sense. Oh, Dustadori, I can't really answer because Dustadori asks the front-facing camera, Pixel 6 versus 6 Pro. I've only had the 6 Pro, so I can't comment on the regular Pixel 6. But but that's true. I do hate front-facing cameras. So take your photos from the rear-facing camera; you'll be much happier. Oh, yeah, McCorcoran 3, I would love it too if the Vivos were available here in the United States. Oh man, that X70 Pro Plus is so good. Anyone who's like pretending to care about content creation, but then says something like, "Well, you know, I'm just gonna keep my Fold 3 as my main phone." Like, you, it's fine. The cameras are good. They're very good. That is not a content creator phone, a Fold or a Flip. That's not it. And if you really dig into an Xperia Pro I or a Vivo X70 Pro Plus, it's just different. Oh, it's so good. Oh, so Matt, I kind of feel like I answered this one. Matt's asking, do I honestly think OnePlus will merge with Oppo to become one brand? It's kind of like, you know, there are so many manufacturers that make different phones for different regions. And I kind of feel like that's what the BBK strategy is going to be. The Oppo label will represent some types of features. The OnePlus label will represent other types of features. But those two sub-brands are going to be under one leadership. I think that's largely already happened. So I kind of feel like six of one, half a dozen of another. I mean, if you want the better phone, then you put your resources towards making better phones. And I think that's probably better for OnePlus in the long run. If we want a competing solution that really does a good job of going toe-to-toe against Samsung's and Apple's. Oh, Russ, I really wish I could get my hands on that iQOO. So the Vivo also has another brand of like high-performance phones. They're not as camera-focused. I mean, they still have great cameras on them. The iQOO 9 Pro with the 3D Max Sonic fingerprint scanner should be in all phones with in-display fingerprint scanners. I'm very anxious. I'm hoping I can spend some time with one. I feel like they're getting closer to a proper international release, and I've been bugging the Vivo people. Like, I literally even sent them Salah's video where I show up, and it's like, I'm going into 2022 with my iPhone. I'm going into 2022 with my Samsung. And then there's like one guy with a Duo, two guys with a Pixel. No, the Pixels did better than that. There were a bunch, but there's like one face. I'm going in with the Vivo. It was me. This international collection of tech reviewers, the vast majority on iPhones, second place Samsung, third place Pixel, and then there's me. So I kind of sent that their way, just saying like, hey, by the way, I like your products. It's kind of nice when someone reviews your products who likes your products. But that BMW design-inspired iQOO, I'm very anxious. I really want to take one of those for a spin. I really want to see if they can tame the Snapdragon 8 Gen 1. Yeah, exactly, McCorkerin. Every time we see Flossie review a phone from overseas, it has like 120-watt charging. I mean, like, increasingly, the experimental features are not going to come to the United States. Vazicos 8, Samsung didn't want me as a customer, so I went to Sony. I feel we're missing, not in this chat. I feel you guys are doing a good job in this chat. You folks are doing a good job in this chat. But I think the greater conversation of, well, what features do you care about, is not being answered. You walk into a carrier store and you're assaulted by Samsung and Apple. The people on the carrier floor are just going to promote whatever's easiest to sell. And then a bunch of people feel really underwhelmed. Like, we'd never sell laptops this way. This is really gross. Phones are even more personal companion devices. We should be working harder to make sure people get exactly the right fit for their needs. McCorkerin, we'll get a laboratory test on the gaming on the Duo. Like I said, I'm super way behind on the chat here. Baseball Super, you should try it out on the Trio. I'll be curious to see like where Microsoft goes with the Surface next. I really need to reach out to Daniel Rubino over at Window Central. I really want to have him on just for a casual live stream, just to chat. I like the work that they've been doing and kind of diversifying some of their coverage on Windows and Microsoft products and stuff. And I'd be kind of curious to pick his brain what he thinks, because I feel Surface Duo is likely going to be done. If we get a Duo 3, I'll be kind of surprised, and I feel like that'll be the last involvement from Microsoft with Android. I don't believe Microsoft is going to want to make... I don't know. I really don't. I have zero relationship with Microsoft PR, but the Duo 2 was already a challenge because of the form factor of this device. And the 8 Gen 1, I don't know, is going to bring such substantial improvements to performance for what Microsoft is trying to do. So the 888 in the Duo 2 is likely going to satisfy their requirements for a pocket Surface tablet. It would be kind of cool if they go every other year. You know, like Duo 1 came out with the 855 because of the modem. They didn't go with the 865. Then the 888 brought the modem hardware back, so you could put that in a Duo 2. But the 8 Gen 1 is going to run a lot hotter on a phone that is shockingly thin. That's probably not a great combo. So I kind of feel like if we get a Duo 3, it'll be the last version on Android. If we skip the Duo 3 and just stick with the Duo 2 for a while, hopefully we get some cool price cuts coming into 2022. And then whatever comes after that, like in 2023, instead, hopefully we have some roadmap for Windows on ARM. We won't call it a Duo anymore. We'll call it like a Surface Neo. We'll get back to that name. But it's basically a pocket Surface, still can use all of your favorite Android apps, but it's running Windows on ARM instead of Android. And I'm here for that. I'd be really excited to see them take that stab. Oh, Simon, I wish I had found this comment sooner. With only 6 gigabits of RAM and an ancient SoC, can the Duo run the demanding apps that I use, such as Twitter and Sudoku? Oh, McCorcoran, you need at least 12 gigabits of RAM to run the Twitters, unless you are Samsung. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Oh, so Dave Burns, I understand like the peak performance. We were talking about USB. He says 500 megabits per second peak versus 500 megabytes per second peak versus 5 gigabytes per second peak. But we also know that our phone SoCs are not putting out 5 gigabyte per second data transfers. Yeah, it's kind of rough. Oh, Vazicos, MTP, the bane of my existence. I mean, yeah, MTP sucks until you don't have it. So if you plug an Android phone into a Mac and Apple does not support any established standard for USB file transfers and you're just screwed, yeah, I would say that's worse. Again, it's like Apple gets away with not supporting you can't do Bluetooth file transfers to an iPhone. It's so dumb. So yeah, MTP kind of sucks, but it works really well if you just need to move files off of one device to another device and you don't want to have to install a whole different program. Let me go all the way down to the current comments and then we can kind of wrap this stuff up. Oh, McCorcoran. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Daniel's always rocking his Surface earbuds. McCorcoran 3, does the second Duo get noticeably hotter than the first? It gets warmer, but the Duo 2, in my benchmarking, it did fairly well in a lot of the performance degradation tests that I run, like that batch photo process. I'd have to look up my charts because now I don't have it memorized anymore. I did when I was closer to the phone's launch. But it was handling that kind of performance respectably well and running cooler than, say, like the Xiaomi Mi 11s, where I felt like there was less focus on throttling that performance and letting the chip really kind of go to its higher level battery draw and power management. No, guys, I like Rubino. I feel Daniel Rubino and I are cut of similar cloth. We don't agree on a lot, but I also feel like we're trying to showcase a conversation at a periphery of tech, which is far less popular and far less profitable. And it's hard to maintain that conversation and not go a little bit insane. And like the number of times I'm putting together a video and this is the conversation I want to have, and knowing that unless I aggressively cut the legs out from under people that I don't like commenting on my videos, then I'm just going to get wrecked in the comments, you know? Again, I put out a video talking about why I like the Duo better than the Fold, and it was just full of Samsung stands going, "No, you're wrong." And like, that would be the extent of it. That would be it. That's like all I would get. And if that's all the feedback I'm going to get, no nuanced conversation, no differences. I think this is like a fair conversation. Me and TK can have this chat because we're friends and we can say like, "Hey man, I really liked your phone. I'm really happy to give it back to you. Take it. I want my phone back." And we're cool. And we can talk about, "Well, but what you were doing, I like to do this. Or how you do that, I like to do this." And if you hear me and TK compare and contrast, you will get a better sense of what product is going to be a better fit for you. If you only hear Samsung can do no wrong and you are right for always buying the most populars, then you're going to get wrecked. You're always going to hate what you own. But thinking, "I have the best of this, it's not going to get any better unless I switch to an iPhone, I guess." Like, that's what's happening right now. So Rubino is aggressive, and he's snarky, and he can be kind of biting, and I'm here for that. Like, I want to chat with him about it. And again, I kind of want to mix it up a little bit with him, but on some of the core ideas, especially when it comes to aggressive competition ideas and some of the work that Microsoft has been doing, I feel like we're kind of simpatico. So anyway, yes, but one, you're wrong. McCorkran, "How can your favorite food be pizza when hot dogs are obviously way better?" And then you do my exasperated arm dance, and you, "Oh no, but this is how it really works." So, let's go ahead and wrap this up. I did tease there is going to be a contest on this week's episode of the podcast. I should say a giveaway. This is not a new inbox product, and it's not going to be shipping from the manufacturer. Also, this is a Verizon locked unit, so it will be United States only. If you want to try and win it and you live in another country, I will only ship to an address in the United States. If you want to work out international taxes and stuff, you can by all means figure out your own solution for that, but my responsibilities are done at the borders of the United States. So I really have to throw a huge shout out, a really cool double thumbs up of glory to the folks at Kyocera. I mentioned in an email, like, I think this is a really fun phone. I love rugged phones. This is something that I think would be kind of fun just to put out there. And there's so many folks I think would really like to play with this device. And they were cool with me giving away the unit they sent for me to review. So this is the Kyocera DuraSport 5G UW. This is it's a little on the pricey side, but this is built industrial grade rugged. So it's not just, "Well, you can get a cheap Pixel and put it in an OtterBox." This is not only IP68, but the phone itself is built mil standard 810H, not 810G, 810H. And they're also sending it with a really rugged Batman-inspired bumper case. So not only does the phone itself Is it more survivable and more ruggedly built? They're also putting it in a really thick, chunky corner bumper case that has a good lip around the screen and has these little feet that keep the phone from ever rubbing up against its camera sensor. So full details on this giveaway are going to be on the show notes for this week's episode, somegadgetguy.com. Just as a thank you to the folks at Kyocera, I am going to try and promote this contest a little bit more. Obviously, when I just talk about it at the end of a two-hour podcast, there's not a lot of engagement on the giveaways and the contests that I run. But for a $600 phone that I really wanted to kind of give out to people that have been watching the show and maybe do a little self-promotion on something like that, help out the folks at Kyocera, kind of hook them up a little too, then I might tweet about this giveaway a bit more aggressively than I have in the past. This is a $600 phone with a $30 case. I feel like that's fair. So, somegadgetguy.com, show notes for episode 240, if you're also listening to this on the streaming or you're catching the replay. You're going to see all of the notes for how to win this, and I wish you happy hunting, because this was a really cool phone to revisit. I've enjoyed my experiences with Kyocera. I feel a price increase is appropriate, where this is a Japanese company that manufactures in Japan, and I feel like there's a consumer conversation where maybe a parent or maybe just someone who wants something a bit more ruggedly built is fine using a slightly weaker processor and getting 3 days of battery life. Pros and cons. It's all about balancing and finding the exact right fit for your needs. But if you win this phone and you're on Verizon, you will have an incredible weekender. You want to take this phone out hiking, take it down to the beach or take it to the lake. You will be far less concerned about this than if you were to take your Fold to the beach. Just saying. So, thank you everybody for tuning in. My voice is literally on its last legs, so I desperately need to end this podcast, but it held out for the 2 hours. I'm really proud about that. Thank you everybody for tuning in, for joining this conversation, asking some really fun questions, getting into the end there. We're going to announce the winner of the Kyocera next week, so tune in for that. See if you win the Kyocera DuraSport 5G UW. Folks, take care of yourselves out there. The world is still a crazy and amazing place, and there's a lot of stuff going on. Just make sure you're looking out for yourselves, and that way you can also continue to look out for others around you. I'll catch you back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Take care. Be well. I love y'all. I'll catch you back.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.